And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Stick around until the end of today's episode to hear the opening segment of The Athletic's newest narrative podcast, The Play Callers, where Jordan Rodrigue takes you inside the dynamics of the NFL's youngest coaching family, the Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay tree, with exclusive interviews with four head coaches and all your favorite sports personalities. Find all five episodes on The Athletic Football Show feed wherever you're listening to this podcast.
Welcome to a special edition of the Athletic NBA Show live in Las Vegas for Summer League. Your host Andrew Schlecht with me. I've got Sam Vecini. Sam, there's been some rookies playing basketball here in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about said rookies. We're going to start with Victor Wembanyama. He had a pretty bad game, followed by a good game.
Yeah.
And all the hoopla around the first game kind of all went away. And the one thing that I loved being in the building was just how much the crowd wants him to succeed.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of a beautiful basketball moment. Like it has really been a joy to watch him play and to see how the crowd just like wants him to be so good.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of speaks to something that I remember we talked about on the show. We did like what, 10 hours following the draft,
yep,
something like that, when mm-hmm. you were standing in the middle of LaGuardia Airport
yeah.
and I was in Australia and you're just like getting coffee from a random guy from the shout out Brooklyn Diner, if
yes,
I remember correctly.
Shout out to the Brooklyn Diner.
Yeah. So the thing that you mentioned to me at that point was that the crowd was so engaged with Victor.
Oh,
when
yeah.
you were in the arena, when you were in the building for the draft, it was a coronation for Victor Wembanyama.
Totally.
You know, me, other people who do draft work, whoever, right? I think we can get so caught in the weeds of, oh, Cam Whitmore is falling. Oh, you know, what's going to happen with Scoot and Brandon Miller?
Yep.
All the other narratives of the draft, because there's intrigue there.
Yep.
On some level. A lot of NBA fans don't care about intrigue. They care about greatness.
Yes.
And they want to see this 7'5" guy who has an 8-foot standing reach, who
yep.
can dribble, pass, shoot,
yep.
do everything that we hope he can do and mm-hmm. achieve every dream that we have for him
yep.
on some level. And that's what made last night seeing him play against the Portland Trail Blazers without Scoot Henderson so special, I yep. felt like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he dropped, I think, 27-12. So, yeah. Something along those
three blocks.
Lines.
Yeah.
He was incredible. Like, truly. You know, he knocked down a three, if I remember correctly,
two
off the top
four.
Of my head.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just like kind of, you know, spitballing, I feel like
yeah.
half the time, because
yeah.
I'm just like going off of memory. But he made a couple of mid-range jumpers. And I think the big thing for him was, you and I talked about, along with who did we podcast the first night? Mo DeKeel.
Yeah.
After his first game.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about how he came out a little bit passive in
yep.
that game.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like he did last night, too. And it took him getting a wide open mid-range jump shot, I think near the end of the first quarter.
Yep.
And that got his confidence back.
Mm-hmm.
And from that moment on, it was just like, oh no, I can do this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm that dude. I'm good here. And just straight from there, it was like, okay, I'm just going to drop 27 in 22 minutes or whatever it was.
Yeah. He looked like what we had hoped he would be.
Yep.
And it was beautiful. We have other shows talking about that. You can hear Zach Harper talk about that yesterday, but we're going to move on to Brandon Miller, who plays for easily the most horrendous summer league team that I've seen in a very long time.
Yeah.
And that is not his fault, but
no.
I absolutely despise watching this Hornets team. He played well in that game against Wembanyama. He had 16-11, three steals and assists. He did have like a really nice dunk down the stretch of that game. Thoughts on Brandon Miller so far? One thing that I want to say is his size, it like sticks out, and that
yeah.
he's so skinny.
He is very skinny. He doesn't have a lot of lower body strength.
Yeah.
I feel like right now that's the biggest thing that stands out to me.
Yep.
In two games in Las Vegas so far. He's shooting 27% from the field and 17% from three. Those are not
ideal.
Great numbers. Averaging over the course of four summer league games so far, six fouls per game, three turnovers per game. Look, I don't think he's been very effective, but again, I don't think it's his fault. He's a guy that I kind of stated throughout the process, I felt like needed creators around him early in his career to be able to get him the open threes that he got at Alabama, to be able to create more open opportunities for him in general. One thing that I feel like we haven't seen a lot from him, he has to create everything for this team. One thing I feel like we haven't seen a lot from him is cutting and playmaking off the ball. And that's something that I felt like he didn't do a lot of at Alabama either.
Yep.
It's the difference between being able to get easy buckets and having create everything yourself.
Yeah.
I don't think he can create everything himself, but I also think, as you said, this Hornets team, my God, man.
It almost makes me not like basketball anymore when I watch them. It is horrendous.
I think they're the worst summer league team I've seen in a while. True, for a team that has like six or seven draft picks on their team, I think it's the worst summer league team I've seen in a while that like has guys that should be reasonably good.
Yeah, guys that were picked high in the draft. But when I watch this team, I think Brandon and I kind of like Bryce McGowan's.
No, 100%.
You know, like, of like the guys that are on the team, like who's an NBA player? Those two might be my like two top.
Yep.
Because I think Bryce can play. I also ran into Bryce's aunt here on the concourse because she's wearing a Bryce McGowan's jersey. She's actually in a video that we did. And I'm like, why are you wearing a Bryce McGowan's jersey? And she's like, oh, that's my nephew. You know?
I love that.
It's hilarious.
No, but like that's the thing that I was having a conversation with a scout about this, watching the games. And the biggest thing we pointed out was just like Brandon Miller feels like the guy on this team that actually knows how to play.
Yeah.
Like he knows how to play within a team construct. He passes, like he understands it in a real way. Whereas a lot of these other guys outside of Bryce McGowan's, I think, don't do that often, which is a bit concerning.
Yeah.
Like to me, if I was a Hornets fan, I wouldn't be that concerned about Brandon Miller. I'd be more concerned about the fact that guys like James Bouknight, Kai Jones, Nick Smith don't really look like real NBA guys yet.
Yeah, no, they don't. I would feel encouraged, though, that I think LaMelo and Brandon Miller could have some good chemistry just between those two. Just somebody to set the table for Brandon a little bit more.
I think that's right. Like I think just having a table setter will be very helpful for Brandon Miller. The other thing I will say is like his jumper on his three-pointer particularly is short almost every single time.
Yeah.
And that I think comes back to the leg strength issue.
Yep.
He needs to get stronger through his lower half in order to, I think, get the drive upward and get that kind of momentum that he needs to be able to consistently knock down threes.
Yep.
It'll come in time.
Yep.
But I wouldn't be surprised if his early season doesn't look great.
Yeah. Someone who doesn't need to get stronger at all. He's good. Scoot Henderson.
Yeah.
Who unfortunately has left with an injury and probably won't play any more summer league, but he had 15 points in 20 minutes, 5 boards, 6 assists. And it was almost kind of whenever he did leave, you didn't feel dissatisfied. You felt just like, okay, he's got it. Like we're good. even within the first few minutes of watching him play and just seeing his confidence and the way that it's just like, oh my gosh, like you just know, like, you know it when you see it with a player and he's got it.
No, 100%. He knows how to play within ball screens at an expert level already. That's kind of the thing that I always loved about him. Like he has that real feel for how to get to his spots. Like he doesn't need to just explode by someone with his first step every time. He has the ability to understand exactly where his angles are and exactly the advantages he has in order to maintain those advantages by using his enormous frame and using the explosiveness that he does have once he gets that advantage. He is an expert at locking guys in jail on his hip already, which for a teenager is absurd. It really is just like a special guard. The jumper I think looks okay. It will come,
yeah,
in my opinion. Like it'll come at some point,
yeah,
and we'll see what it looks like.
Yeah, if you're a Blazers fan, you should feel super happy.
And the other thing that I want to say that stood out, the passing, just mm-hmm. from day one.
Oh, like, yeah.
His ability to force help defenders to collapse onto him, and then his vision outward. Again, I've always thought he was a really underrated passer. It's why I really had him in his own tier, like by himself.
Yep.
Vic I had in a tier above him, but like mm-hmm. I had Scoot in his own tier as well. The passing is kind of the reason why. I've always thought he was a really good passer that just like didn't get as much credit for it in the G League.
Yep. Another good passer, Amen Thompson. Again, didn't get to see a whole lot of him. Played 28 minutes in his first game. Had 16, 4 and 5. 3 steals, 4 blocks, yeah. Only 2 turnovers. He's another one that he just looks under control. He looks like he knows what he's going to do. And he is ridiculously disruptive as a defender.
Yeah.
And Rockets fans should be very excited that they got this guy.
100%. Just his ability to use his length extension and use his first step to be able to collapse defenses
yeah.
constantly. That is translated to this level.
Yep.
I think it's going to translate to the NBA.
I do. Too.
He had a couple of just really nasty inside hand, like left hand finishes at the basket.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, wait, I don't really know if anybody else does that.
I know.
League wide.
Yeah.
It's just that like he gets there so quick and he understands how to maintain that advantage once he gets there so quick.
Yep.
By going up with that left hand on the inside quickly. Yeah, he's something. The passing also stood out. Like he had a couple of cross corner kickouts. He had a couple of just like awesome dump offs. Like
yep.
everything that you could have hoped for from Amen Thompson.
Yeah, he's fantastic. We're kind of marching through the lottery here. We won't get to Cam Whitmore because he fell at 20, but we sat together and got to watch some Cam Whitmore and just we're just stunned by the normal basketball passes he was making in a game. It was good to see, honestly. It was just good to see that he had that in him in this setting, which this setting can lead a lot of guys to just think, let me get mine so that I can make my stats look good.
Yeah.
And he just made just some very normal passes that were just like, I just like completely froze. Just like, oh, wow. Like he's got that in him.
So he took, I think, 18 shots in the first game and 16 in the second game. So he's getting his. Let's be clear about that. Like he's never.
He was always going to get his. But within that, if he can mix in just some other stuff.
100%. Yeah.
Like you got to feel really good about that, too.
Look, he's never going to wit less. Like we know that. Like he's just never going to. He's going to be his own guy. He's going to try and get to the basket. And he's going to stop the ball. Like, yep. It was funny. The one hook pass that he threw in the first quarter of last game, like, he caught it. He stopped for, like, 3 seconds to, like, survey. That's what he does. He's, like, a constant, like, I'm going to stop. I'm going to survey. I'm going to see what's going on. And then he drives and collapses the defense and throws the hook pass. And it's just like, well, you could have just reversed it to the wide open guy, like, on the opposite wing if you wanted to. But, no, that's good, too. Like, that's fine. It's going to be a process with Cam. The thing is that the athleticism just immediately stands out.
Oh, it pops.
It pops in such a big way. The physicality stands out in such a big way.
Yes.
That I think he's going to be fine. I think that he should have gone very clearly in the top 6 or 7.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's averaging 17.5 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 1.5 steals so far in Summer League. And, yeah, he hasn't been wildly efficient doing it, but I'm good with the production, given that he is younger than basically everybody here.
Yeah. What did you think of Asar Thompson?
I think he's not in the best situation.
Yeah.
I think is where I'm at. Okay. Asar is a guy that like really knows how to play and like really knows how to pass and play make and move without the ball. And this Pistons team so far has been a bit stagnant.
Okay.
Jaden Ivey has 10 turnovers in 2 games. Mm-hmm. And it does feel like a lot of possessions are Jaden Ivey dribbling a lot.
Yep.
And that was probably a priority for the Pistons
coming in, was
to get Jaden Ivey reps and to give him an opportunity to play with the ball in his hands a lot.
Yep.
But I feel like Asar is not getting those opportunities.
Yeah.
And he should at some point. Maybe they shut down Jaden at a certain point.
You would
and
think so.
Yeah. They let Asar play on the ball. For a game, mm-hmm. maybe. I would be interested to see that.
Yeah.
Look, he's not a great shooter right now, and we know that.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's been a little bit ineffectual at times on the court, mm-hmm. but there are other times where his feel for the game just really pops and the athleticism really pops. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't pop as much as Amen, which is something we've talked about throughout the pre-draft process.
Yep.
But Yeah, I think it's fine. Like, I think he's, I'm not disappointed in him, I guess. Yeah. I would say.
Yeah. He just didn't get, it didn't feel to me that he had like enough chances to like showcase what he can do. And some of that's like he's playing with two bigs too that aren't spacing the floor. Mm-hmm. And you have James Wiseman like clearly trying to get his own in like a lot of different spots to where it is. There's not super team oriented, which is fine. Like that's kind of summer league for most teams.
Yep.
Is that unless you have guys that feel super sure about their career and their position, it's like, no. How can I shine?
Yep.
It's not about how I can make everybody accentuate everybody else. For some guys, it's that way. For this guy, Anthony Black, is kind of that way. Just that's the way he plays the game.
100%.
And he looked awesome. And we talked about this on the way over. We're walking over. And he had some lucky shots. Like he had like a banked in three that went in. He ended up making, he was one or two from three. The one he made was just kind of this like heave that went in. But the process with his passing, the process with just his general aggression and like getting downhill.
Yep.
He was everything that I wanted him to be. He just looked like he was set free from the shackles of college basketball. And in particular, Arkansas, where the floor just feels just so crunched. And it's like, where is he even going to go?
Yeah.
And now he just looks just like an eagle, just spreading his wings, flying about the summer league court. He looked great.
Yeah, it was really good. Like, I thought that, you know, it was funny. I was talking to a scout, and the scout told me that he thought the second half that Anthony Black played for Orlando was the most impressed he's been by a player here so far.
Wow.
Straight up.
Wow.
And I think I'd probably take Jabari Smith's second half in the first game, if I'm being completely honest.
I would too.
Yeah, I think that was just ridiculous. But it was a ridiculous display of shot making. And I think what the point that the scout was making was that the process that Anthony Black, like, in his brain was taking was what was so impressive. Mm-hmm. Like, the right pass every single time. The ability to collapse defenses regularly. Like, maybe not every single time, but, like, very regularly. The comfort level to handle the ball in the mid-range. The consistency of making the right read, the right kick out, the right reversal. All of that is really impressive. I think he's a very impressive defender as well. We knew that coming into the draft. I'm a big fan of Anthony Black. I thought he pretty drastically outplayed Jaden Ivey, if I remember correctly, because that's who he played in that first game. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I agree. His teammate, Jet Howard, since we're on the Magic, kind of struggled in that first game. He was 3 of 13, 2 of 7 from 3, 8 points, three boards, 4 assists, 3 steals. It's going to be about the shooting with him.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be where he provides so much value to the Magic, is if he can just be a lights out shooter for them at 6'8", you know, that will be what he delivers for them, and didn't get to showcase that in game one.
Yeah. And honestly, if I was a Magic fan, I would be heartened by the fact that he had 4 assists, that he had 3 steals. These are places that he just never impacted the box score.
Yeah.
With Michigan, he had 4 rebounds in the game as well. It felt like he was a bit more active when he didn't have the ball.
Yeah.
The shot did not fall. You know, that's going to happen sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's a good shooter. I mean, the 2 that he did make from 3 were like ridiculous movement threes where you're just like, oh no, like you're one of maybe 10 guys that could make that here right now. So I'm heartened by those factors, even if he didn't play, you know, necessarily as well as what I think people were hoping.
Yeah. The mystery man of the draft, Bilal Coulibaly, played for the Wizards in his first game. 9 points, 4 boards, 4 of 13. Looks like the project we expected.
I think that's right. Everything that we thought he would be.
Yeah.
I went back and watched this game because I was in the other gym for it. And when it happened live, I just got there for like the last quarter. And that was the quarter where the Wizards like had a furious comeback, and like he was super active and energetic and aggressive, and he had a couple of really nice cuts. Like he had a couple of moments where he was just like havoc incarnate defensively, like just everything that you could want from him. It was awesome. But then I went back and watched the first half, and it was like, oh no, this is going to be a minute. Yeah. Like this is going to be a minute. The shot is going to take some time. Yeah. I think the decision making is going to take some time just because he doesn't have as many reps doing that as some of the other guys here at this stage of his career. So the athleticism, the tools, all that pops from an immediate standpoint. It's just going to take a minute.
He also needs a point guard. And I'm not sure that Jordan Poole is exactly the point guard that I would have handpicked for him. But he needs somebody to help him set the table a little bit as well to for him to be successful, at least for now, just because the self-creation stuff isn't quite there.
But to that point, you know, Jordan Poole is not going to be their point guard. You know, Tyus Jones is going to be their point guard. And he is a real table setter at the very least. You know, Jordan Poole, I imagine, will have the ball in his hands a lot, though, and that won't be great for Bilal. But the moments where Tyus is able to dictate and get smart reversals and everything.
You're right. Yeah. That is something that I overlooked, is Tyus can really help him.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Jairus Walker is a monster. He's a defensive monster. I mean, his quickness really popped for me with his size and just the way that he could get to the ball as a defender. It really popped. Offensively, it's gonna be a process for him too, like a lot of these guys.
Yep.
But immediately you're like, oh, okay, I see it.
Well, what this is weirdly, like, we always talk about how long it takes rookies to acclimate defensively.
Yeah.
I actually think this is a good defensive draft. Like, from like a pretty immediate standpoint.
Yeah.
In regard to these guys. Yeah. And I think Jairus is like the prime example of this outside of Wembanyama.
Yeah.
Like, Jairus had a weak side rim rotation that I have no idea how he got to the ball. Like, truly, I have no idea how he was able to get all the way across the play to swat the shit out of this ball in the way that he did.
It was like
a volleyball
spike.
It was incredible. And then you throw in the rebounding, you throw in the passing and the playmaking.
Yeah.
Like,
he had 8, 13, 5, 3, and 3.
Yeah.
It's like,
it was the perfect Jairus Walker encapsulation. Like, everything you got in his first summer league game is who he is as a player. Like, you hope that the offense and the shooting and the ball handling comes along. You hope the finishing comes along as much as anything.
Yeah.
Because he really needs to be willing to go up and finish at the basket as opposed to go for like a little floater. Like,
he has
often
the strength.
Does.
And that's like the most frustrating thing about watching him is like, you should just mash on these dudes. What is going on here?
Yeah.
And maybe that will come in time.
I think it will. Yeah.
And playing with Halliburton, too.
Right.
Just who's going to pass him open for those opportunities will help.
Well, and what's going to be really interesting with the Pacers is now the thing that they lacked last year was like a short roll guy, like somebody that could really relieve the pressure when teams would put two on the ball and Tyrese.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have Bruce Brown. Now they have Jairus Walker, both of whom you're going to be able to get 48 minutes from those two in some regard. Yeah. And being able to have that, I think, is going to make this offense sing in like such a substantial way. I think Jairus was awesome, even though he only Jairus shot 3 for 13 looking at the numbers, right? I do not care.
Yeah.
Like, the shot is going to take time. I get that. Maybe he never shoots. Like, that's a real potential outcome for Jairus Walker. Mm-hmm. But everything that you wanted when you drafted Jairus Walker came fully on display in this game for Indiana.
Yep.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date, first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. The Thunder traded up to get Cason Wallace. If you've been following along in any way, if you listen to my Thunder show or anything, you know that we have been on a journey with just knowing how to say Cason's first name. And it has come full circle. Give me all of the iterations.
Okay,
please. So here's the timeline of his name. Cason was what he was called at Kentucky. It's what he was called on draft night by Adam Silver. And then I was on an airplane listening to the press conference that Sam Presti had, and he called him Cason. And I am perplexed. It wouldn't be the first time that Presti has said someone's name strangely, but this one was weird. It's like, you just picked this guy 10th and you're calling him Cason. Okay. And so I'm like, okay, what's going on here? A couple days later, we get to talk to him at a presser. We talked to him afterwards, say, okay, just for the record, tell us what your name is. Like, just say your own name, please. And he says, well, people call me Cason. He said, my mom named me Cason. And so we're like, okay. So your name is Cason. Great. For 2 weeks, we call him Cason on everything. Every time that I say his name, that's how I say it. And then we get the pronunciation guide from the Thunder, which Cason had input on and said, please call me Cason. And then they put it in there. And now we're back full circle. Cason Wallace is his name.
I'm glad we got there because holy shit, is this guy good.
He was so good in that game. We've only seen him once. The Thunder did play in Salt Lake, but the deal wasn't done until the 6th. But he, in his first game, had 23, 2, and 2 steals. 6 of 10 from 3.
Yeah.
And like the 6 is great, but what I was really excited about was the 10. That he's willing to take 10 threes in 27 minutes is, if you're a Thunder fan, like that would be the number that I zero in on. And just like, this guy is going to shoot it when he's open. It looks super fluid.
Yep.
And he's super confident. And then all the other like defensive disruption, just being engaged in the game the whole time. There was a particular play where the ball just kind of squirted out and was going to go out of bounds. And he raced to get it. There's 3 seconds left on the shot clock. And he just pushes the ball to get to half court, heaves it. And everything from there tells you what you need to know about him. The ball did go in.
Yeah.
And the crowd went berserk. But even if it didn't go in, like, that just tells you about Cason Wallace's process. It's like, I'm going to go after every possession all the time, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, he's the best. I really love watching Cason Wallace play. Again, you mentioned the volume from three. To me, it was the process. Again, like, everything that he did on the court in that game for the Oklahoma City Thunder was exactly what you want him to do in games for the real Oklahoma City Thunder. Like, you want him to fire threes. You want him to be able to consistently knock down shots off of some movement. Like, it wasn't like he was flying off of screens. Like, he wasn't Duncan Robinson out there, but like, he was relocating. He was finding little avenues and areas to be able to create that little bit of separation from his defender. I loved the way he played. Yeah, he dropped 20, making 6 threes in a game, and that's not going to happen often. But I think he does have like a good mid-range game, and I think that the defense is always going to be there from him. So I loved what we saw. He's a perfect Thundery player.
We talked Jet Howard already, who went 11th. Derek Lively also played in that game against the Thunder. He looks like a 19-year-old center that is going to take some time. Very athletic. But it's going to take a little bit of time with him.
Yeah, and it took time the first, 2 months that he was at Duke, right? Like, people like hand wrung the whole time that Ryan Young was playing over him early in the season.
Yep.
And he's going to be a project. And we knew that going in. If Dallas can get 15 minutes per game from him by March,
yeah,
I think that will be a win.
Yeah.
But what Lively has is an immense upside defensively because of the versatility with which he can guard in ball screens,
yeah,
because of the immense rim protection abilities that he can hopefully bring to the table moving forward, and because of the finishing at the rim. And it felt like they just didn't really hit him all that often.
Yeah.
Rim running, I still don't know like how comfortable he is as a rim runner, yeah, to be honest. Like, I feel like he's much more comfortable in the dunker spot right now.
Yeah, yeah,
that makes sense. But that'll come. Like, yeah, it'll come.
Yeah. Grady Dick is in an interesting position with this Raptors team because I don't know that there's really anybody that can help him do what he does best with the Raptors right now. It's not a very good summer league team. He did have 11, 8, and 4, and so he's trying to do the other things on the court whenever he doesn't have the ball or doesn't feel like he's going to get the ball. But shot 5 of 13, only got 3 threes, which just tells me that he's not being put in the best position to succeed if Grady Dick's only getting 3 3-pointers.
Yeah, and, you know, I think he's taking, like, 6 3-point attempts per game, and they just, like, aren't falling yet in these two games. I thought he looked a little bit more comfortable in the second game.
Yeah.
Like, for him, the lack of strength is going to be an issue early on. Like, he will have to continue to fill out his body and his frame. But I think the shooting and the like understanding of how to move without the ball and how to play even has stilled out here a little bit. Mm-hmm. He just hasn't been as effective as you want him to be because of the lack of strength, it feels like to me.
Yeah. In game one, he was 2 of 9 from three. Second game, 1 of 3.
Yeah.
I think he'll look better when he has somebody out there with him. Like, I think Scotty Barnes, I think they can benefit from one another.
Yeah.
If they get on the court together. But still TBD on Grady Dick. Same with Jordan Hawkins for the most part. I thought he's looked fine. He's looked a little small to me on the court, and maybe that was expected. What were your impressions of him?
Well, he's quite skinny, and that's the reality of where he is right now in his development in terms of his frame.
Yep.
I think that he's probably had a bit of an easier time than Grady kind of creating his own shots with off-ball movement.
Yeah.
I think that it just comes more naturally to him to be able to fly off of those screens like that, or being able to just move without the ball. Even if somebody isn't setting a screen for him, he's just kind of moving constantly. And, you know, Grady will sort of do that, but not really necessarily. Jordan's just constantly moving without the ball in his hands. The thing that has stood out to me with Jordan is just like the lack of strength on the ball. Like, he's turned it over 4 times per game so far. In the defense, I mean, he is just very skinny right now and guys go through him. So Jordan Hawkins seems like kind of what I thought he was pre-draft, which is just like a real bet on shooting. And he hasn't shot it well yet from Vegas yet, but as long as he shoots it, I think it's going to be fine. It's just like, what is it? Is it a starter? Or is it a rotation player? Honestly, the Pelicans are probably going to be happy if he's a rotation player. But you know, the upside exists for him to be a starter if he can iron out some of these other things.
My boy, Kobe Bufkin. He had a super rough start. I think he had, what did he have? He had 8 turnovers, and he was like 0 of 8 from 3 in his first game. He bounced back and played better in game two, but it has not been what maybe I would have hoped to see from Kobe Bufkin.
I'm not surprised that he's struggling. So
yeah,
I actually thought he was much better in game two. Like, I thought the struggles stopped at game one. Like, I thought he was actually pretty good in game two.
Yeah. He had 17 in game two.
Yeah. But particularly with him, he is very skinny and very young.
Yeah.
Like, he is younger than Jet Howard. He's younger than Jairus Walker. We talk about him like he's a sophomore, but he's not, by NBA standards. Yes. And he's 175, 180 pounds.
Yeah.
It looks it when he plays on the court.
That was noticeable for sure.
But again, the thing that has stood out to me is the processing. Like, you can see it from the moment that he takes the court. Like, he makes the smart extra passes. Like, there was a moment late in the game, because I was there in the gym for this. Like, there was a moment late in the game, the fourth quarter against Denver, where there was like a scramble where like the ball like eventually got to him and he threw like just this dart to the basket to, I can't remember who finished it, but like it was the kind of like just quick read processing where he knew where he was going with the ball before he caught it.
Yeah.
That you don't expect from guys that are this young. Mm-hmm. So I thought Kobe was quite good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's going to have a good career for the Hawks. This will be our last one. And I just wanted to get to him and then maybe we can
rapid fire a couple other guys.
But Keontae George, boy, oh boy, he looked amazing against the Clippers in particular. 33 points, 10 assists. He hit 6 threes in that game. The passing was impressive. The moving without the ball was impressive. I mean, he caught an alley-oop himself in that game. He looks very comfortable with and without the ball and is showing early like why the Jazz were ecstatic to get him outside the lottery.
Yeah, everything on the ball for Keontae, I think, has translated at the highest level that we could have hoped that it would have translated. Look, he's played one game in Vegas. I will note that in the three games he played in Salt Lake, like, he shot 38% from the field and 29% from three.
Yeah.
Right. But the thing with him is that he's not turning the ball over as much.
Yeah.
The passing and the processing, I think, is a little bit better than what we've seen, and the biggest reason for that, I think, is actually the frame has gotten, like, he's thinned out a little bit. Mm-hmm. He doesn't look as heavy as he was at Baylor.
Yeah,
he's kind of done real work on his body, which has really, really helped him separate, which gets him into fewer crowded areas on the court, where he's like kind of jump stopping and like, oh, I don't know what to do with the ball, like, I'm kind of stuck here, what do I do? It just looks a lot more decisive right now for him, and I think it's because he can separate a little bit better.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, he had 33 points and 10 assists in this first game here. I mean, he was, I was in the stands for that one too. He was unconscious in the second half, like, completely.
Okay, who else has stood out to you? First round, second round, anybody else that you're just like, okay, wow, this guy has really popped?
Yeah, couple of guys. I think Brandon Pajemski's passing has really been good. Yeah. I was there in the gym again late last night watching the Pelicans-Warriors game. He had like 8 assists in the first half. Yeah. Like, it was like, oh, wow, like, you were just diming everybody up right now. And he made like a concerted effort to do that. The shot hasn't been there yet, but I think he can shoot. Like, I'm not real worried about that. The other guy I want to point out is Hunter Tyson.
I was going to say Hunter Tyson. He looked like the best player on the court.
I thought he was outstanding for Denver.
Yeah.
I think he has been absolutely outstanding. He knows how to play. Like, the ability to understand when he has an advantage as a driver, the ability to understand how to come off of screens and create three-pointers. I love Hunter Tyson. Honestly, I can't remember. I know I had him and Strother very close.
Yeah.
I might have had Strother like one or two spots ahead,
yeah.
But I definitely had Tyson ahead of Jalen Pickett, and I think Tyson looks like the best of those three so far. Like, his his ability to come off of screens, his decision making, his movement off the ball, I think he's been really, really good.
He's got great size too. He's somebody that you can see playing for them next year.
Kind of. Like, it would not stun me if he's the one that plays for them next year out of these three.
That's at least what it looked like the other night.
Yeah,
he would be the one.
And again, like, I was in the gym last night, which, like, by the way, hilarious story last night. I don't know if people were watching Hawks Nuggets. It was like the last game of the night or whatever in Cox. The Nuggets came down on this furious comeback to finish the game, like, truly crazy comeback. And there was clearly one person in the stands that had bet on the Nuggets, and he was screaming at the top of his lungs, hoping for a cover at the end of it. And at the end of this game, what happens is the Nuggets miss a shot. The Hawks, like, I can't remember what happens. Like, the Hawks catch it. They have to inbound it, maybe, or like they catch the rebound and they just like throw it up. And Mo Gay catches it like right underneath the basket.
Yeah.
And dribbles once, holds it for a second, walks, dribbles again. And the referees have to call time out. They have to call time right as the time's expiring. So the buzzer sounds. There's this dude in the stands screaming, "He just double dribbled. He just double dribbled." And they put time back on the clock. They put 0.6 seconds back on the clock. And they inbound it. to Colin Gillespie,
yeah,
who heaves a half quarter and it rims out by like half an inch.
This guy dies in this.
Yes. It was one of the funniest experiences I've seen in a long time, like truly.
Oh, that's amazing. There are way more people gambling on Summer League than should be. It's hilarious.
It's the best. I love it. Oh my God. Summer League gambling is the best. Who are guys that have stood out to you?
I mean, of the other guys that we've missed, I think Marcus Sasser is going to be able to play.
Yeah, I agree.
I like his, he is what I think the Pistons wanted. Like, he's going to be a rock. He's steady. Yep. He just knows how to play basketball. I think you can put him in the Detroit Pistons rotation right away.
Yeah.
I liked him. And I think his shooting's been fine, but I think that with like Cade Cunningham,
yeah,
like I think that guy is going to be a floor spacer.
I think that being able to put him with Cade or with Jaden, like he can play with both of those guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you can play him and Asar. Like,
yep.
He gives their backcourt real lineup flexibility and versatility. Yep. I love that pick, and I think it makes a lot of sense. There's a guy I want to close with.
Okay.
So do you have anyone else before you go?
I really don't. Like, Rupert looked bigger than I thought he would.
Yeah.
But he's been fine.
Yeah.
The project.
I think Audrey Jackson had the highlight of Summer League for me so far.
Okay.
He went down, had a ridiculous chase down block on Peyton Watson, yeah, in the first game that they played. The ball like scrambled back, like got back to the backcourt, and then somehow, I think it was Chris Livingston, he like turned it over or something. And then they headmanned the ball to Peyton Watson, and Andre gets him again and just like absolutely swats the hell out of him at the rim. And it was like going up for, he went up for a dunk like twice and got him twice going up for a dunk in transition. Andre Jackson is going to defend from day one.
Yeah.
And I am so here for it. The last guy I want to talk about is our boy Lenny.
Okay.
Oh, our boy Lenny. Leonard Miller came out.
He was sick.
Was absolutely awesome.
Yeah.
In the Timberwolves first game. It was like the first game of Vegas Summer League, basically. So I think it's like kind of off of people's minds a little, yeah, bit from, yeah, where, yeah, it's gone.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Oh my God, was Leonard Miller good. Like, he had like 16 and 10. He threw a couple of
16, 11, two steals and a block.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a couple of like absurd passes. He threw an alley-oop to Josh Minot that was incredible. It was everything you want from Leonard Miller. Like, truly it was. Like, Leonard Miller being able to come in and grab and go on the break the way he was able to.
Yeah.
He had an awesome rim rotation late in the game to kind of seal up the win defensively that I thought was really, really impressive. Like, just walled up vertically, used all of his like 9 foot standing reach to its best advantage. I think Leonard Miller's a dude. I've been very clear on this. I had him as a lottery guy.
Yeah.
The fact that he fell to 33 is absolutely crazy to me.
Yeah.
The first game for him at Summer League was everything that like I thought he was.
He like
basically
picked up where he left off at the end of the G League season.
Yes.
Where there were a lot of, it was interesting because like he played so well and then he fell in the draft, and then people were like, well, you know, he's gonna play in the G League, he's gonna take some time, and then he comes here and it's like, oh, like he's clearly better than most guys that 100%. Are playing.
100%. Yeah. It's been really exciting to see him play his first game, and I'm excited to see him play more here. I think they play today, if I remember correctly. I'm not positive on that. Yeah, they play Utah at 7 o'clock tonight, okay, so I'm excited about,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we're recording this on Monday. This will drop Tuesday morning, so you'll have already watched another Leonard Miller game by the time that you're listening
and
to
it'll
this
be
podcast.
A masterpiece.
And it'll be so good.
I feel confident of it.
Thanks so much for listening to this special edition of the Athletic NBA Show. We'll have more content coming to you from Vegas. Stay locked in to The Athletic.
Stop anything in this league, there's something else open always. So how do you tie that shit together? How do you get the quarterback to it?
The voice you're hearing belongs to San Francisco 49ers head coach Kyle Shanahan, and he's rolling.
I'm a product of my environment. Oh, I had to change that shit pretty fast.
He's in a chair behind his desk and it's not doing a great job of containing him, because as he starts to talk about football and designing a scheme and calling plays and how, in his very strong opinion, all of that is supposed to blend with the players, he's practically rattling.
Not everyone can do everything, but they better be able to do something. Whether it's the receivers, the quarterbacks, and you keep hammering that stuff and you make people defend it. When they defend it, where's the other hole in the defense and who has the best trait to attack that hole and how do you balance them out? Do you have a guy who can find that stuff? If he can't, how do you get him to go through stuff that he'll get to it? Well, then you only put in two plays because it's number one's going to be wide open when it's the right coverage, but when it's the wrong coverage, it'll be so covered that number two will be open. And that's when he's going to go to number two. But don't just tell him to go to number two. Don't make him read the coverage. Make him go through a process of how to get him to there. Or you got a guy who's can just see everything. Kyle, I always go to number three versus cover three. I always go to number one versus cover two. And this is the throw here. It's like, all right, well, let's start talking to you differently. But hey, yeah, that doesn't help that guy either, though. Because you just went to number three. Well, yeah, you said it's good versus quarters. Not everyone plays quarters right. That mic fucking went with your eyes. Now number one was, there's a situation for everything. Each mic's different. Each play's different. That's why when people say, like, I learned someone's offense, are you coaching that somewhere?
One entire wall of Shanahan's massive office is a dry erase board. It's covered in plays and handwritten notes to himself and a couple of swipes as if he's gotten pissed and dragged his hand across certain ideas in frustration.
That's like, what are you, the water boy guy who left his yellow book somewhere and now we have all your secret plays? Like, do you know what I'm talking about? Like, that's not how it works.
Every play on Shanahan's dry erase board starts as one color. Then he draws over the top of it with a different color, which represents a different variant to the same play. Then another, color after color. Each of the layers interconnect and create a vivid mess that somehow makes so much sense, it's almost three-dimensional. Welcome to the inside of Kyle Shanahan's brain.
I mean, I hate to say this, my life, because I know when I die, the first thing I'll think about are my loved ones. So that's obviously not my life, but shit, after that, that's all I can think about.
This is The Play Callers.
My biggest fear, if you talk to me as a 14-year-old, would be the life of an 80s rock star, which is to achieve success and then be on that downward trend. We were so young and went through some really great moments, but went through some challenging moments. But like, we just wanted to get better at football because we wanted to help our players get better.
I'll tell you what, there's nothing more lonely than when you're not having success and you are the play caller. Because it's easy when things are going good, everybody has an idea. When you're not having success on offense and you're calling plays, you're like, hey, can somebody help me? It's like crickets on the headset. That's just the way it's a lonely feeling. It's a lonely world.
That's Miami Dolphins head coach Mike McDaniel, Los Angeles Rams head coach Sean McVay, and Green Bay Packers head coach Matt LaFleur. They and Kyle Shanahan are the faces of the NFL's youngest coaching family. They all spent their early years together, collaborating to build an offense that borrowed from the old and introduced the new.
Each one of these guys sees the game like an AI screen. All of these coaches have the same principle, but they all have their own stamp on it as well.
They all became head coaches at unprecedented young ages and began to shape their own identities in the most high-pressure environments in sports.
Sean McVay got hired in Los Angeles. People were like, really? Because he was so young. The tree wasn't established as kind of the NFL's go-to hiring bank at the time.
Versions of their offensive system have now spread across a third of the NFL as their respective coaching staffs are pilfered annually. Having a piece of them is synonymous with scoring points.
There's a lot of other owners who are just like, okay, like, I want to get the next Superman play caller. You know, I want to get someone to touch Sean McVay. I want to get someone to touch Kyle Shanahan. Because they've won. That's another thing. They've won ball games. I mean, that's an important thing. We can't leave that part out.
They have 19 playoff appearances between them, a couple of division and conference championships, and even a Super Bowl win.
Sean McVay gets the Gatorade bath after five seasons. The Rams were built to win the Super Bowl, and they have sealed the deal.
Yet these four individual coaches are fated to forever be connected to each other, even as they are always ruthlessly competing and attempting to establish their own individuality. They're competing to be first movers in an ever-changing league, and even competing against their own minds, in obsessive pursuit of perfect answers within an imperfect game.
There's not a fucking minute of any day during the calendar year that that immense responsibility I ever wish to be somebody else's, you know? It's an all-encompassing thing that I feel pretty fucking fortunate to be a part of. I mean, it's pretty fucking amazing you have a microphone giving a shit about what I'm saying.
I'm Jordan Rodrigue. I obsess over football for The Athletic. A few years ago, I saw something at a Sean McVay run practice that helped me understand how the game collides with itself and how the people, especially these people, within it collide with each other. Football is action and reaction, biology and sociology and evolution. A game, yet with the highest stakes and demanding of a deeply human toll. We're watching these guys and the teams they coach live it all right in front of us with an openness that is kind of startling. If you know where to look.